Good morning, afternoon, evening, or any combination of those three. This is Extra Sequential, a podcast.
Porkcast.
We're talking all about pork, your favourite recipes. My name is Chris. We're coming from Perth in Western Australia. This is a podcast all about comics, manga, and graphic novels. And I have two fine young gentlemen sitting next to me.
I'm Maladdin. I'm Chris's regular co-host. And that's it. And we got a special guest.
That's all I am to Chris and nothing more. And I'm Gianni, and I'm a ringer, and I come in when I am called to come in.
Yes, we shine the signal in the sky, and on you leap to...
Exactly.
We shine a silhouette of some bike shorts.
Yeah.
And came around.
These are normal shorts, thank you very much.
I'm sorry.
We have a whole bunch of news to get through this week, as we always do. It's pretty exciting. First of all, it's not really comic related as such. Well, there was a comic based on the Thundercats, I think, in the late 90s,
early 2000s. There's a fair few of them, actually.
Yeah, and Thundercats was announced as coming back in cartoon form a while ago, but the producer, Michael Jelinek, starts with a J.
Jelinek.
He's been talking it up a bit more this week. He's one of the producers of Batman, Brave and the Bold. Love that show. So he's one of the producers of the new Thundercats cartoon, which is set to debut on the Cartoon Network in 2011. The original series ran from 1985 to 90 and was instrumental in my youth. Thundercats, awesome show. It's using the Japanese Studio 4C, Maladdin.
Oh, really?
I don't know if...
No, Studio 4C did really good work. They did Mind Game.
I think they did Animatrix stuff.
Yeah, they did some of the shorts in Animatrix. They specialize in experimental animation.
Cool.
Very fluid style and very kind of painterly.
Okay.
Gorgeous to look at, so I'm curious now.
Yeah, well, the aim is to simplify the mythology of the Thundercats, because I don't know if you guys remember, but there's a lot of sci-fi and fantasy stuff. There's like three different planets all mixed in one. It was quite a confusing mythology. So the aim is to basically just simplify it, and there's not much. I think there's just one piece of concept art that's been released of Lion-O, who's the leader. But yeah, so that's coming out Cartoon Network 2011, and Snarf will be in it as well.
Snarf, snarf.
That's the one.
Yeah. I have a small question. When did it suddenly become the cool thing to use mythology to describe anything? I've heard people use the mythology of Mission Impossible, you know, like just to describe the entire setting.
Well, I mean, Thundercats has a whole cast of characters and ran for 5 years, hundreds of episodes, so I would say that is a mythology.
I think once it hits a certain point, then you can say, okay, it's got a mythology to it, it's got a world to
Doctor Who.
I mean, like, one Mission Impossible film just in isolation,
yeah.
Then that wouldn't really have. It's just the one film in its
own. But when you have a John Woo and the other dude,
in the original series,
there is a new. There's a fourth Mission Impossible film.
I think it's called
Ghost Protocol, because they want to drop the someone just got a message.
Sounds kind of Tom Clancy-ish.
What the message? Or I don't know.
Well,
do you know Tom Clancy?
No, Johnny? that's more Tom 24. Clancy. His phone going off.
Terrorists have my daughter.
Tom Cruise is in it again, and so is Ving Rhames and a whole bunch of other actors. So,
yeah, they filled it up with a lot of.
Is it in Australia again?
No.
Damn. I can't wait. Yeah,
I can't remember who's directing it, but anyway. Martin Sheen from The West Wing is playing Uncle Ben, and Sally Field is playing Aunt May, who seems very young. But anyway, they're both cast in the new Spider-Man film, directed by Mark Webb from a screenplay by James Vanderbilt, who wrote Zodiac with Robert Downey Jr.
Oh.
Good film, actually, with David Fincher film as well.
It almost sounds like they're putting some effort into this thing.
Yes, certainly more than the last two films. So it doesn't have a title as yet, it's just called Spider-Man, and it's... start shooting in December for a July 3, 2012 release. It will be in 3D. So, yeah, Sally Field is Aunt May. Martin Sheen from The West Wing is Uncle Ben.
Do you reckon they'll call it Spider-Man Origins?
Spider-Man
Origins 3D!
Spider-Man 3D. That's what they're going to call it.
Maybe.
I don't know. I'm over 3D.
Yeah.
I think the gimmick is gone.
Well, I just found out Shelley and I were both really keen to see the new Conan film.
Yeah.
The one with Jason Momoa as...
From Stargate?
From Atlantis? Stargate and North Shore, and I think, those kind of Bold and the Beautiful kind of shows.
Oh, okay, yep.
And I think he was in Baywatch Hawaii, so that's, what to expect.
He's dating one of the Cosby kids, I think.
He is. He left his
Lisa
wife.
Lisa Bonet. So
she was quite the attractive lady.
Age. She was.
Yeah, and he left his wife for her. Shelley fills me in on all these things.
Wow.
But the stills for it looked really good, and then I found out, they're calling it Conan 3D, and it's only going to be in 3D.
I think that if you go to one of the smaller cinemas, they may not just have it in 3D. They might just have it in 2D.
I think that's a possibility, but I still have to ask for Conan 3D. I guess it is the third film, so it's not like Saw 3D, which is the seventh one or something.
I think Spider-Man will work in 3D. Tron. Tron isn't 3D, I don't think, is it?
Isn't it?
I don't know.
It is absolutely in 3D, yes.
I was going to say, that'd be the
no doubt.
You're right. I'm reading the Empire cover. Tron Legacy, first look at the most incredible 3D movie ever.
Bang.
Okay. Disney is making a Tron animated series set to debut in summer 2012 on the Disney XD channel.
Okay.
It's called Tron Uprising. It'll be executive produced and directed by Charlie Bean, who did Samurai Jack, had something to do with Samurai Jack. And also the Tron Legacy writers, Edward Kitsis and Adam Horowitz, also serving as executive producers. Voice cast is pretty impressive. Elijah Wood, Emmanuel Chikri, Mandy Moore, Paul Rubens. Paul Rubens, isn't he, Pee-wee Herman?
He is.
And Lance Henriksen and Bruce Boxleitner, reprising his role as Tron from the original 1982 film and also appearing in Tron Legacy.
I heard that they cancelled some original screenings of the original Tron, you know, as part of the promotion, because when they first showed it, people were laughing. Recently, like, kids were like, "Oh, this looks stupid." So to avoid the embarrassment and the potential, like, "Oh, why are they making a sequel to this terrible-looking film?" kind of thing.
I think maybe they should just embrace that it's really sort of daggy and old-fashioned looking now, and just go, "It is a bit funny to watch."
But but I don't think they can, because they want to take this one's supposed to be taken pretty seriously.
Fair enough.
Maybe after it screens, though, it'll come out on Blu-ray and then I'll happily buy it, because it's a pretty fun film.
It is. I saw it recently. And I'm very excited about Legacy, but you're right, it's more for nostalgic.
Do you remember when they were going to call it Tron 2, but the 2 was the O? So it was Tron 2.
Oh, yes, okay. Yeah, that's annoying, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't do that.
It's like that band that was called 5 back in the 90s, but the letter 5 was the number F. Someone was interviewing them, and they kept calling them 5-5 as a joke, and
or
they didn't like that.
Like Anal Destination?
What the?
5-0 Destination, except the 5 looks like an A when you read it, so it looks like Anal Destination.
Wow, proctologists everywhere rejoiced. Tron Uprising apparently is the second venture into television, because Disney XD also announced in March that it'll air a 10-part Tron micro-series sometime next year. I don't know what that means exactly.
Is that like live action or
I don't know. Animated? Well, apparently it will be animated in some form, whether that's CGI or cartoon. I don't know.
Is that a web thing or is that TV, you said?
It looks like it's on TV. It's 10 parts, so maybe it's just a... Maybe it's like a bridging between the movie, which opens on the 17th of December, and the newer Tron Uprising series.
Well, I guess we have to go see this film now.
Tron Legacy. Oh, the more I see about it, the more excited I get. Last bit of news from myself. Legendary Pictures, you would have seen kind of their Celtic-looking cross on a lot of films. Watchmen, The Dark Knight, Hangover. They are starting their own comic company called Legendary Comics, I believe. Bob Schreck, not spelt the same as the Green Ogre. Bob Schreck is the editor-in-chief. He founded Oni Press. He was a senior editor at IDW. He's currently writing their Jurassic Park comics, I believe. And he's also an editor at DC Comics and Dark Horse for a while. So he's been brought on board as the editor-in-chief of Legendary Comics. Their plan is to publish 4 to 6 OGNs. That's original graphic novels. 4 to 6 OGNs a year, starting from next year. And apparently he's quite close friends with Neil Gaiman and Frank Miller and stuff. So hopefully those guys will come on board. That's all we know at this stage. But Maladenu said that they might be using it as a kind of a platform.
I suspect there'll be, because a lot of these companies go fishing around for graphic novel projects to adapt to film, usually just before they make it big, and hopefully to do some cross promotional thing. I suspect they'll be testing the waters on new scripts and that sort of thing, which is fine by me.
I think if you own it at the beginning stage, when it's actually a comic, then you'd be laughing, really, wouldn't you? Because all these things are getting adapted these days.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, instead of shelling out millions and millions of dollars to buy the rights once it's already big.
It must be for the rights, because comics aren't a huge moneymaker for anyone involved. I mean,
unfortunately.
Even like the big properties aren't making that much. The creators are, say, Scott Pilgrim. I mean, he's getting a fair bit of cash now, I'd imagine. Neil Gaiman gets a bucket load of money every couple of months.
Yeah.
But they're the exceptions to the rule,
I
imagine. They
are, that is true. Mm. Yeah, it's all the ancillary spin-offs that make all the money, like the action figures and the movies and such like. All right, you guys got any other news you'd like to mention?
Unless if Johnny had something? No, yes?
No, I think you pretty much covered it, really.
New shorts?
New shorts, no.
Got a haircut?
Tell us about that.
It's just helmet hair.
All right.
I'm doing Movember.
Are you?
Yeah, I should mention.
I couldn't tell.
I know. We're beginning that a lot. Movember is basically for the month of November. You try and grow a moustache and facial hair for men's health issues. So me and a few guys from work are all growing facial hair, at least attempting to. I think this is my third year in a row, and I'm not getting any better at it. But there's not much you can do. You can't force yourself to push the hairs out any faster.
Concentrate.
Follicle stimulation.
There is no spoon.
So, yeah, I'm trying. I mean, you can grow a beard fairly
quickly, yeah.
What's your secret?
Think really hard.
Being more manly than
happy
me.
Happy thoughts.
Okay, I'll try that technique.
Yeah.
That's the news, is it?
Yeah, well, only add one small piece.
If yes, please do.
Fans of the Perry Bible Fellowship, which stopped in 2008 when Nick Gurich said, you know, I feel forced. I feel boxed in. I've got to stop this to do other projects. And he's been in the Marvel Strange Tales comics recently.
Yes, and I think Perry Bible Fellowship has been collected from Dark Horse in a couple of trades.
Yes, there's been two collections. One's like a big one, which has been quite cool. But it seems to be starting back up. There's a new comic up on the site. So welcome back, Nick Gurich.
Cool.
And I mentioned to you guys, he started a... what do we call that project site?
Kickstarter.
Kickstarter, which you talked about a few weeks, where you try and get people to help you raise money for a project.
Yes.
He started a project to raise $15 trillion to pay off
with
the to pay off the US national debt.
Sounds like something.
I'm perfectly happy that they don't have that much of a national debt, because at the moment we've got a very good exchange rate with them. Yes. So as long as they keep it up.
That's true.
All the comics retailers are laughing.
Yeah.
This sounds like something Dr. Evil would do. Use the internet to raise $15 trillion.
It's listed on the site as funding unsuccessful.
Point for trying.
Yeah.
That's the news for this week. I watched, on your recommendation, Sudden Death, Jean-Claude Van Damme film from the mid-90s.
Fine recommendation.
Die Hard in a hockey rink.
Yep, exactly what it is.
And I was on a nostalgic streak, so I also watched Red Heat from 1988, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jim Belushi.
Jim Belushi, yeah. tell us what you thought of both, because I've seen both recently. So
I liked Sudden Death, actually. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Red Heat was good. I do remember watching it years and years ago, because it's the film that starts in a Turkish bath.
Yeah.
And then Arnie is like just in a bath town, starts punching guys up, and then he punches someone through a window and they end up fighting in the snow. It's like, if you like watching a whole bunch of naked men fight, it's definitely the film for you.
It's on this fan of UFC.
yeah, that's right. And both films, Sudden Death and Red Heat, have evil transvestite henchmen/women in them.
That's right.
So that was.
I don't remember how that one is dispatched in Red Heat.
Shot.
I think the sudden death method is much more entertaining. Put through a conveyor dishwasher.
Yeah. Drowning among the cutlery.
That was pretty entertaining kitchen sequence. There was like a meat slicer. There was a deep fryer.
Yes.
Have you seen it, Johnny?
No, I haven't seen it.
Sudden Death.
I'd say it's my favorite Jean-Claude Van Damme film.
And there are so many to choose from.
I know, right? You got Time Cop.
Yeah, I think there was a Time Cop 2, but without him.
He's not in it. The guy who played Bruce Lee in...
Yes, you're right.
That dude.
Yes, his name escapes me. I also watched Paranormal Activity 2.
Right.
At the cinema with my brother. I think I prefer the first one. That's kind of it's not really like Blair Witch, but it's the easiest way to describe it. So Paranormal Activity 2 is a prequel, and it's pretty good because it links in with the first film, and it's got the same actors kind of cameoing,
mm-hmm.
both cross films. So it's basically, you know, security footage and handheld footage about a house that is haunted.
Right.
It's users kind of ordinary looking people, no one too, you know, not Hollywood starlets. And it's quite acted very naturalistically.
Right.
They just seem like normal people. And
there's a dog in it.
Scares in there. There is a dog and a baby. Babies are always freaky, even when they're not in horror movies.
I like dog actors. I think you do invest yourself emotionally in a dog sometimes more than a person.
Oh, Benji.
Don't kill the dog.
But yeah, it was pretty freaking parts. And you always, you know, when it goes to the night vision, you just try and tense up, and you can see how everybody goes quiet in the film because they just know where, and nobody wants to be the first person to jump, but you can't, you know, it's going to get you.
Have you seen either of these, Johnny?
I haven't. I heard good things about the first one, but then I missed it. I'm the sort of person, if I don't watch a film as it comes out, I'll miss it.
Right. I'll get on DVD. The first one's out on DVD now.
Yeah.
Another film, which I talked to you about, Mladen, last week, was Lake Mungo, M-U-N-G-O.
Oh, yeah,
It's an Aussie film, came out last year. And if you like Paranormal Activity, this is probably one of the scariest films I've ever seen. Independent, doesn't stay around famous, but it's about this girl who kind of goes missing and it's talking to her family and friends and what happened to her. Freaky film, probably the freakiest film I've ever seen. Very effective. Lake Mungo. Horror films, watch it. It's not a supernatural thing necessarily, but a definite worth watching.
Okay.
You guys saw what's commonly referred to as the Facebook movie.
The Facebook movie, yeah. I'll let Johnny tell us about it.
Yeah, The Social Network. Now, I believe it was directed by David Lynch.
Fincher.
David Fincher.
From Alien 3 fame.
Oh, right.
He did better films than that. Yeah, Zodiac 7.
My friend said that to me yesterday. He goes, David Lynch, he's such a good director. I'm like, I don't think it was, but oh well. Didn't check my facts beforehand. Has music by Trent Reznor.
Yep.
Which I thought was really interesting.
And Atticus Ross, and they worked together quite
well. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. How parts of the background sounds will turn into music halfway through. And
Cool.
Yeah, really interesting stuff. And it was just, has the kid from Zombieland.
Jesse Eisenberg, playing Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook.
He was quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, originally when I was watching the film, I knew that Justin Timberlake was in it, and he plays Sean Parker, who invented Napster. And I thought, Justin Timberlake looks a bit different. It didn't quite click for me for whatever reason. It was a really interesting film. I thought it was really clever the way he puts it all together, and you get this feeling that he's gone a bit power mad.
Yeah,
but
I like those kind of themes of power corrupting. You know, he was never a nice guy to begin with, though, and the film goes to some lengths to show that his only friend is Eduardo, and who he sort of sells out.
Yeah.
The guy, the dude who's playing Spider-Man, is the guy he sells
Andrew
out.
Andrew Garfield.
Andrew Garfield, yes. Always comes back to Spider-Man. The script was by
Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah, who did The West Wing and A Few Good Men.
Yes.
And I've noticed at the theatre there was a huge age group of people seeing it, not just teeny boppers. And
my parents want to watch it, which, my dad doesn't even know anything about the internet, but he wants to watch it.
I think that's why they're curious, because they're like, well, I'm not going to start an account, I just want to see who these people are.
Yeah, and it's not, from what I understand, it's not a tech-heavy film, it's more about the drama and stuff, it doesn't have all,
Yeah.
There's a little bit of heavy tech bit in the beginning, which I'm ashamedly admit I knew exactly what he was talking about.
So did I.
It's like editing all these bits and pieces, and I was like, I know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
But other than that, that'll just go over the top of your head.
It
sounds like tech.
You don't need to follow it. It just sounds like... Yeah. It's not like in Hackers, which no one saw.
They're stealing CD-ROMs and floppy disks.
Oh, it's not like The Net with Sandra Bullock.
Oh, yes, or The Net 2.0.
There's a sequel.
There is a sequel.
Who's in that?
No one famous.
Wow, written by Alan Sorkin.
I don't know.
I'll have to check on that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I'm right, though, Chris.
About what?
Alan Sorkin directing The Net 2.0.
I think you might be wrong and slightly bewildered.
I'm not confused. You're confused, man. You can't handle the truth, that's all.
We'll have to watch that, actually. I think the next film I'm going to see is Devil, which is M. Night Shyamalan.
See Social Network instead, I think.
Yeah, I
think he's kind of jumped the shark.
He did The Last Airbender. The film was the last film.
Which was apparently pretty terrible.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
It's kind of a shame considering the cartoon it's based on is quite good.
Yeah.
Mm. Very popular. And even fans of it are like, oh my God, what's he done?
Yeah.
Wow.
No one cares.
What we've been reading. Should we go on to comics?
Yeah, we'll talk about a comic. Why not?
From Radical Publishing out about 2 weeks ago, actually, is this new 6-issue miniseries called Abattoir, which was announced a while ago, I think at Comic-Con in July. It's the credits page is rather lengthy. It's created by Darren Lynn Boosman, who was the director of a few of the later Saw films. Concept by Michael Peterson. Save your judgments till later. Script by Rob Levin and Troy Petteri. So that's four people already. And usually warning flags kind of go up because it sounds like too many.
Two of the 10 writers of Scary Movie.
Yeah. Well, then they're all Wayans brothers. But this is actually works well. The script is very naturalistic, great dialogue. And the art is by Bing Cancino. That's a name and a half. Very painterly kind of digital art. You guys can flick through the pages as I kind of do my best to explain what it's about. It begins in the late 1980s, and we're introduced to the Mitchell family at a kid's birthday party. And it's kind of got this creepy setup, even though there's no dialogue, the sunlight, but there's just something about the art that something bad is going to happen. And then the dad goes crazy for an unknown reason, attacks all the guests, including the clown, with various power tools. Weeks later, Patrick and Richard are two real estate agents trying to sell the house that this slaughter happened in. And they go into the house one night after they've been drinking, and then this creepy old man shows himself to them. His name is Jebediah Crone. What a name. And he desperately, he really wants to buy the house. So he kind of creeps Richard out and then just leaves. So he's desperate to buy this house. Over the weekend, Richard, one of the real estate agents, has some brutal nightmares about the murdering and then learns that Mr. Crone may be an actual urban myth about a man who buys houses where murders have happened and then moves on. So, yeah, it's a great 80s look, just about, you know, the decor and the fashion. It's very 80s. It's pretty cool. And it's more cinematic than most comics, which is what Radical specialise in. They've done stuff like Hot Wire, FVZA, that kind of stuff. Mm. So, I mean, when I describe the plot, you know, people get murdered in a house and then a creepy old man wants to buy that. Seems like something from a bad 80s film that went straight to VHS. And there's nothing overly supernatural about the comic yet, but I'm curious to see what happens in the next 5 issues. I actually enjoyed it. Yeah, as I said, the plot's simple, but it carries on for, you know, what, 30-40 pages. It looks great. It is quite bloody and brutal, especially in the opening pages, but I really liked it. Cool. I'm curious to see where the next 5 issues go.
So
that's Abattoir from Radical Publishing.
Just flicking through the images now, I admire that he's not afraid to use a bit of light in some of the panels, because I've noticed in a lot of horror books, they just wash it right out.
Yeah, that's true.
There's no white on the page.
Yeah.
Where he throws in quite a bit, and it works quite well as highlights, and there's like a daylight sort of slaughter scene.
Yes, and don't I see find that often.
Much more kind of chilling than the washed out dark ones.
True.
I don't know. Yeah, you don't see that very often.
And it's interesting to see the clowns actually be the victim in horror films rather than the the killer.
The traitor. Yes.
So yeah, if you like horror, yeah, despite all the hefty creator listed, is quite a well made and well written comic.
Nice it on.
What have you guys been up to,
Johnny?
I had a look at the first issue of Kick-Ass 2.
Mm. Oh, yes, cool.
Which was, the first part of it was sort of featured in Mark Miller's Clint magazine.
Yes, we'll talk about it later, yes.
But I read the actual issue as it's been released now. That was really cool. I really enjoyed that one. Yep. It seems a bit more like he's... Well, if you've read Kick-Ass, the actual novel, graphic novel in the series, it's slightly different to where they did with the... with the movie, they kind of changed it a bit.
Yeah.
It kind of seems like he's taken it now and kind of merged them a bit more.
So
they're kind of a bit more, you know, in line with how they were originally. So they're kind of a bit more of a hybrid story for the second part of it, which I think a lot of people will be jumping on after they saw the film, because it was really successful. And yeah, it's really interesting. It's kind of just following up what's happening, and it did a whole throwback to the what's happening now, and then let's see what happened, what led up to this event in the beginning, and then you see what's happening. So I think I've guessed the twist already.
Yes.
It's only one issue in, but I think I've guessed it already.
You're one of those.
Yeah.
So it's written by Mark Miller and art is by John Romita Jr., the same creative team for the first series.
Yep, same team. So it's all, it looks very similar. And yeah, so if you like the first bit, you'll like this one as well. But yeah, I thought it was really cool. And I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of it, seeing if I'm right.
Awesome. Aladdin?
This week I picked up a lot of comics. One I read was the new volume of Northlanders by Brian Wood's epic Viking saga.
Brian Wood, who wrote Demo. Demo, awesome black and white
DMZ.
DMZ, yep.
And a whole bunch of stuff. He's a very busy man.
He is.
Yeah. This volume is called The Plague Window, and the art's by Leandro Fernandez.
So this is book 4, so this is the collecting... Yeah, a whole bunch of issues.
Each volume collects its own story in independent stories. You can pick them up in any order, which I quite like.
That is good.
Yeah, and they never really have any connection besides that they're about Vikings. So really, he has free reign. There's no even repeating characters.
Oh, really?
Like.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So you can jump between 100 years from now. There's an interesting historical event. I'll jump in on that.
Okay.
But this one, he does like a gripping tale of survival, and it's a 11th century Volgan village, which is somewhere in the northern frozen areas.
Frozen tundra.
I didn't look up where Volga was, but anyway, they closed their walls to survive a plague on the advice of this educated foreign priest who is like the voice of reason and science, and they're all skeptical of him. And the inhabitants, including the new widow Hilda, who's her main character, and her daughter have to survive the harsh winter and food shortages, and there's this old Viking Gunborg who's trying to use the opportunity to take over, and there's a violent power struggle. So like this series really excels at, I think, the dialogue and the kind of everyday scenes between people, rather than, well, like the great Viking scenes are there, but what really sells it is that personal level.
Yes.
You get a feeling of what it might be like to try and survive through a winter where there's no food, and pretty entertaining
and
stuff.
And it's all written with contemporary language as well.
That's right, yeah.
Instead
so it comes
of,
okay.
Yeah.
Instead of being, oh, Hilda, come check my longboat. Yeah, things like that, you know, it's not like that.
Well, he said it wouldn't make as much sense for them to be speaking in this kind of ye olde Shakespearean language.
But that's not really how they spoke. They kind of spoke exactly. normally.
And that's kind of the typical thing in Viking films, to have everyone talk very proper English because it sounds old-timey. Yeah, so instead he gives them really rough sort of... Not like street, hey, brother, how you going?
No more, secret handshake kind of business.
No, more like how sort of low-income earners might talk to each other today. And this volume in particular is probably really, really good art, I thought. It's closest to the promise of the first volume.
Okay.
Because the second and third were good, but there was something lacking in them. The art style was a bit too different. And this one, he does the long form character drama, and the series is probably right now is the best it's been in a long time. Oh, so it's a good time to jump on board, especially when each run has nothing to do with the last one. So
the art does seem pretty, like, very fluid and real, and there's lots of yellows and browns. Like, it almost, he's selling the weather and the temperature quite well, the snow and the fire, campfires.
It's very easy to.
It seems very earthy. Yeah, you know,
you can get absorbed right into it, and that feeling of that setting because it's just washed out. Yeah.
Wow, there's intestines.
Yeah, and blood really shows up on white snow, and he...
goat intestines. Cool.
Yeah, good stuff. What else have you guys been reading?
Johnny mentioned Clint. So this is the new magazine from Mark Miller, writer Mark Miller, who did Wanted and Kick-Ass. So basically, well, this came out, I think the first issue came out in August, but we only got it here in Australia a couple of weeks ago. So it's a new monthly magazine. It's only 100 pages, full colour, so it's more like a magazine size, obviously, than a comic size. As Gianni mentioned, Kick-Ass 2 is serialised in here, so there's just a few pages, not the whole issue. Also, Nemesis, the whole first issue of Nemesis is in here, also written by Mark Miller. And the whole first issue of Turf, written by Wossy, Jonathan Ross, UK TV show host. So, I mean, I've read both of those issues before in their individual forms. I wasn't that impressed with Clint. I mean, I admire Miller's approach. Basically, he's trying to bring in British comics back. So this is something that you'll find in the newsstands in England rather than just in comic shops. And he's got a lot of celebrities that non-comics readers will be familiar with, such as Jonathan Ross, Jimmy Carr, comedian, the McLovin guy, Frankie Boyle, who I don't know who that is. But, you know, it's okay. There's a lot of comics in here, but there's not much non-comic-y stuff. There's a bit about the Charlie Manson murders. There's interesting stuff like the Chinese Tom Cruise, who does the dubbing of the Tom Cruise films, and like the French Angelina Jolie, that kind of stuff.
I was the same. I thought there would be more articles in it.
Yeah.
Because magazines these days are sort of dying out as is. You can't have things like that. You have to be more feature articles than anything else. And there wasn't quite enough of that in terms of comics. And plus, the comics have all been out in other forms.
Seen before,
okay.
So
there is an original one here, Rex Royd, which wasn't that great, but it's got some good ideas. But Frankie Boyle, who's on the bearded guy on the cover, he does that. So that's only a few pages, and that's not bad. It's got some good ideas, but it's not enough to maybe continue. I won't pick up Clint number two. I mean, the editorial on the back page is, you know, the secret diary of a celebrity pothead, just about this guy who's like, you know, lying to his wife that he's smoking marijuana regularly and stuff. It's a very men's magazine, but it's just got comics thrown. It's like FHM or one of those kind of, well, not Lazoo Weekly or whatever the men's mag is at the moment.
Mashed together with 2000 AD.
Yeah, kind of. It's a good, I like the idea that it does get comics into the hands of people that not necessarily would read it, but it just doesn't go far enough, and I don't think it celebrates comics enough. There's no interviews with comic creators.
Considering he knows so many of them, probably on a personal level,
there might be more. Like in the second issue of Clint, there's an interview with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Oh, yeah.
The larger guy and the skinnier guy. From
I know who's Simon Pegg.
And then number three, which is out now, has an interview with Quentin Tarantino. If you go to clintmag.com, you can look at previews and that kind of stuff. I like the idea. I just don't think it's quite there yet.
Question?
Yes.
Is this like where he's premiering the new pages of Kick-Ass 2?
Kick-Ass 2 premiered in Clint first before, as Johnny said, before the whole issue came out, which is available now.
But it's only about half the issue anyway.
Yeah, there's only like about six pages in this issue. And it's got the Kick-Ass 2 comic starts here, and it's got the Kick-Ass 2 actors on the front cover. So obviously he's years and all guns are blazing.
It should have exclusive Kick-Ass 2 content because that would be the main seller of this magazine until it gets off the ground.
People that wouldn't go to a comic shop wouldn't have read Jonathan Ross's Turf, wouldn't have read Nemesis. So this will be their first exposure to that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think this is a magazine for fanboys. It's basically, you know, for us, it's Prejudice to the Converted, but it's basically trying to reach out to non-fanboys and girls.
Righty.
So I like that idea, but it's just a bit too juvenile and a bit too watered down, and it's just not quite there. It just doesn't
give juvenile, respect. The title itself.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Should we explain that, I guess? So back in the 50s and 60s, I'm not going to say the word, but the L, if you had a big L and a small I, that was banned because the L and the I looked like a U.
Yeah.
So obviously they weren't allowed to say the word Clint in the comics in the 50s and 60s, so Mark Miller is trying to be all cool and cheeky, and that's what he called his magazine.
And I don't know if he does it with the other issues, but if he positions someone's head over the gap between the L and the I...
Oh, okay. Yeah. I haven't seen
that. He almost does it here. I reckon someone told him, no, you can't do that. So they had to move the head back.
I was looking at, there's another feature here on hot mums, which are a lot of them British mums I've never heard of, you know, like hot TV celebrity mums. I was reading Empire as well, and obviously Empire is just my favourite magazine, and the two couldn't be more apart. But it's a monthly magazine. It's designed very simply. It's not an arty magazine. It's a very simple design. But I'd try and avoid it if I was you.
Okay, fair enough.
What else have you been reading?
Johnny and I both had a look at X'd Out or Crossed Out. I don't know how to pronounce that.
X ED Out by Charles Burns from Black Hole Frame.
I've been calling it X'd Fame. Out.
Yeah. Well, that's what I have too. So.
Yeah.
I like the art style. It looks very kind of... almost 60s?
Yeah.
Kind of?
He has very good sort of line control, I find. So the pages, they always seem polished and professional. It never seems sort of half-assed with what he's doing. This one's out by Pantheon Books, and it's going to be the first of, I think, 3 volumes. So it's really like the start of this story, where a character called Doug, who appears to be recovering in bed from some sort of operation to his head. He's got this mysterious bandage and his head.
Like Hinting.
That's the...
In his dream world.
In his drug hallucinations, he sort of takes on these cues from Tintin. Yep. He's got a cat called Inky.
Okay,
who leads him around, get it? Yeah. And there's that the famous egg and mushroom from Tintin and the Shooting Star.
Okay.
Which has that, you can see it on the cover of the book, it's got that red and white pattern, speckled pattern.
Oh, okay, yep.
And the image of like eggs and rebirth and fetuses and things pops up. But he has these bizarre dreams, and they blend the imagery of these... when he's lying in his bed, he's got all his Polaroids and, like, memories around him and CDs, and those images bleed into his dreams. So if he's looking at a photo of this, it'll come into his nightmare, I guess, and they'll spark memories, and you see it alternates between him remembering this girl he sort of fell in love with who's, like, an artist, and his own memories. And the Tintin thing I'm still kind of confused by, but I guess it's his childhood memories. I don't know.
It's like he's got a Tintin shirt on or something when he's in the hospital.
Yeah, it's like a punk Tintin shirt because he's got like these earrings on.
So he's drawn different from all the other characters. He's done more in a...
if you have a look, style. If you go to... so that's him there.
Yeah, that's him normally.
In the real world.
Oh, okay. And then when he goes to the dreamscape...
it's just weird.
He becomes...
and there's one part where he's actually wearing a very similar mask.
Yes.
And that's kind of...
he's reading like beat poetry in like an art sort of event.
Warehouse-y sort of thing.
And they sort of boom off stage and... yeah, he's wearing a Tintin mask and he's reading Edgar Rice Burroughs' poetry and stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. But Charles Burns really sort of does these stories of self-obsessed kids in their 20s, you know, that artistic snobbery and stuff.
Yep.
And he's, what, like 40-something now? 30?
Yeah. He's quite old, so.
Yeah.
40's not old. I mean, he's 6 years away.
Well.
At least for a 24-year-old.
To be writing stories about.
Whippersnapper like you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Luke Perry... playing a teenager in Melrose Place.
Exactly, the same thing.
Right.
Like,
who's that Muppet made of leather? Troy McClure.
Oh, yeah. What do you think of it, Johnny?
I liked it. I'm a real fan of his art style, to be honest. I haven't read a lot of Charles Burns stuff other than that. But I do like... these are the sort of comics that I read these days anyway.
It have a lot of... it seems to have a real texture and weight and volume to it. It's full colour.
Mm. I mean, it looks very cartoony, but the style is very, very well defined. And I like the dream worlds and stuff. I think that works quite well. Yeah. And
the book.
All of his characters have always got their mouths open, though.
Yeah, kind of this anticipation and this...
Always got their mouths open. Back in the real world, these realistic characters all look a bit like that. That's the only thing I'd say. But, I mean, like, I really like it. I thought it was really clever.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see how it's going to go for the rest of it. It does kind of... I didn't realise when I was reading it that it was a three-parter. I mean, I sort of realised, but I didn't really think... I thought there'd be more conclusion towards the end of it, but it kind of just finishes...
So, it's fair to assume that because you see the book and it's presented in this lovely oversized hardcover with the red binding on the side, and you think, oh, it's a done in one, but it'd be quite nice when you have three books like that on the shelf, I think. So yeah, but the big size is probably a throwback to the European format of comics.
Yes,
yeah, but yeah, it's definitely a sort of book. It rewards rereading because there's certain dream imagery that happens at the beginning, which you only find out later in the story what that's relevant to.
Okay,
so and in later volumes, certain things that happen in his dreams now, which don't make any sense, but I'm sure in later volumes, as he flashes back to more things, I'll be like, oh, that's what that is.
Okay.
So it sort of comes together like a puzzle that you sort of comprehend this guy and the relevance of what these images are about. So that's that kind of dreamlike effect, I suppose. So it's quite effective in what he's intending to do. If you're not into that style, you probably won't convert you. But yeah.
It's interesting if you want to read something slightly different, I think.
Yes.
If you, it's probably not the most accessible alternative comic to pick up initially.
No,
but it is very cool if you're sort of into that sort of thing, and you're looking for something slightly different to read. Mm.
Talking about something slightly different, I've been reading a book called Return of the Dapper Men. This is a book by Arkaya, who do some stuff. They do Mouse Guard, that kind of stuff. And I've actually got an interview with the creators on my blog as we speak, which was one of the articles that was destined for the Extra Sequential magazine to print, which never made it. So that's on my blog now. It's written by James McCann, and art by Janet Lee. Basically, it's like a storybook. It's set in this town called Anarev, which is kind of like a fairy tale, clockworky kind of villagey kind of town. All the kids are under 11. And there's this mute robot girl called Zoe and Aiden, A-Y-D-E-N, and they're unlike the rest of the town, so they don't fit in, and the kids kind of hang out below the street of the village below. One day, the clock stops ticking, this kind of hum that all the town has known, tick-tock, tick-tock, just stops, and something changes, and people just feel a bit differently. Then 314 dapper men float down to the ground and the clock restarts. So if you flick through some of the pages, you'll see there's these awesome scenes of these dapper men nicely dressed, much like ourselves. People will describe us as dapper indeed, quite regularly. So they've got green bowler hats, nice coiffed hair, like little tweed jackets and umbrellas and ties. So they just descend from the sky. Basically one of them stands out, and he befriends Zoe and Aiden and kind of talks in this kind of Yoda-like riddles, because Aiden kind of knows that there's more to life than kind of the dull humdrum of what's happening. So when these dapper men, only one of them stands out and actually befriends and talks to the rest, the other dapper men just kind of go off and do their own thing and don't really talk to anyone. The closest thing to a bad guy would be this guy called Faber. And he's kind of in love with this huge clockwork statue of an angel that kind of has been in the village forever. There's really nice combination of the dialogue and the narration, which is kind of really done in a storybook pages. And there's some pages where the text is basically just huge on the page, and that kind of blends in and works with the artwork itself. It's really good. I really liked it. Here's a quote, which will kind of sum up what the book's about. But in a few cases, change is brought about by one boy knowing only that everything around him is wrong. So it's basically this Aiden guy kind of teaming up with the robot girl Zoe and this one dapper man who doesn't have a name. Well, he's kind of referred to as 41 because that's what his hat says. Basically, he's going around the town and trying to fix things. I can't give too much away, but it's kind of a book you could read to your kids. Maybe not in one sitting because it's almost 130 pages long. But I really liked it. James McCann has done a lot of stuff. He was actually working for Marvel as one of their PR guys for a while, and now he's as a writer full time. He used to write for One Life to Live, a daytime soap opera. Janet Lee, the artist here, this is her first comic, but she's a gallery artist traditionally, and there's a two-page bit in this hardcover book which talks about her process, where she does collage style. She draws, she cuts it out, she sticks it on wood and then kind of scans and photographs it. It's a beautiful art style, and you guys can really see the texture on the pages. It's unlike anything ever done. Not just the layouts and the stuff that is so kind of madcap, but definitely readable. It's never incoherent or rambling, but it's just got such a visible and visual and soft style. It's just so appealing. It's kind of hard to take your eyes off.
I think the visual thing does harken back to Little Nemo in Slumberland.
Yeah, that's a good
and,
call.
And you can see with these tall panels, he uses the exact same font.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
is
that's
it
true.
He or she?
She.
She.
Generally.
Oh, she would do the layouts, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just the way especially the way the balloons are arranged.
Yeah, the speech bubbles are quite unique. Like, yeah. I mean, the whole way that it's been designed is unlike anything you've seen in a comic book before. It's just got this kind of quaint and quiet charm that it's kind of hard to resist. I really liked it. It's kind of handmade and, yeah, just oozes this crafty kind of
It looks
of appeal.
Like steampunk for kids. That's the feeling
yeah.
I'm
kind
getting.
Of, yeah, yeah. But not in that annoying way. The steampunk can kind of be...
Yeah, it's not as dark. There's a lot more colour to it.
No.
Why does everyone hate on steampunk?
Oh, you know, it's like vampires or zombies. I guess they're everywhere.
Yeah, but, I guess it is quite the popular genre.
But if done well, it can work. And yeah, this really works. I was quite very pleasantly surprised by this book. It also includes a two-page introduction by Tim Gunn, who's a fashion TV show host, and an 11-page art gallery by some awesome artists that basically do their own interpretations of the characters.
Cool.
Return of the Dapper Men, Archaea Comics. It's out now, 130 pages, and it's an original graphic novel, so it's a done-in-one story. If you want something different from the comics, something that obviously has no violence or swearing in it, no superheroes, this is definitely one for you. I really liked it. You can check out preview pages on my blog as well.
Lovely. Before we move on to our feature review of Superman Earth 1,
yes,
I thought I'd mention, Chris lent me these, the old Max Fleischer Superman
yes.
cartoons.
Back from the, what, late 30s, early 40s?
I have the dates written here.
Ah,
if you'll
good
give
work.
Me.
You've done your research.
Kind of, yeah. yeah, so in the 41 onwards. And okay. Max Fleischer's company did like the first eight. So they're about 10-minute long shorts. They're sort of each one's done in one, so it's not like a movie serial. It doesn't continue
no.
on. Really beautifully animated. And later on, another company took over, but I hadn't heard of that company, so I didn't mention it.
Cool.
But Fleischer, Max Fleischer Company, was Disney's chief rival throughout the 40s. And there's a bit of a history there with what happened. Disney kind of headhunted all their chief animators away from them and kind of crashed the company in that way. And they were doing very kind of similar work. I actually kind of prefer Fleischer's work from the 40s over Disney's.
They've got that kind of rotoscoping. Is that what it's called? It's very fluid
they,
art.
They both used rotoscoping at the time. And you can tell the rotoscoping in this because, Superman and Lois all have this very naturalistic movement.
Yes.
Incredibly fluid for when you think of 1940s cartoon.
Yeah.
You think of rubber-legged beetles dancing around with their arms sort of waving in circles, you know. But it's really quite entertaining. This kind of stories you can expect in there. There's robots, evil scientists, dinosaurs, a bullet car. There's a deadly hurtling comet, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, my favorite was there's a crazed Native American activist scientist who lives in a secret underwater base and he causes earthquakes in Manhattan Island. He's definitely Native American. They make a big point of it. And there's a giant circus gorilla. And there's one episode called Japateurs, which are Japanese saboteurs. there's a lot of really fun stuff in it. And it reminds me a lot of Grant Morrison's All-Star Superman.
In the kind
of way that it's just stuff happens.
It's just fun. And
what's Superman going to do now? Oh, a dinosaur. Yeah. Fight giant Tyrannosaurus. Yeah. That's what he's doing.
It's just wacky. Yeah.
There's a lot of fun. Lois fires a Tommy gun in one of the episodes.
Oh, okay. Cool.
At some bank robbers, and it's very entertaining. And this was the period when Superman was leaping instead of flying.
Yes,
and these Fleischers actually changed it to flying because they saw how the leaping looked in animation. They were like, that's stupid.
Yeah.
Let's make him fly.
Cool.
So that's all their fault. It's quite effective. There's a scene where he fights these robots, which... it's actually pretty brutal because the robots are really bashing at him and he wasn't invulnerable at this stage.
Okay.
So he was getting knocked out and and everyone's dying around him and you know, that sort of thing. But the robots look... Have you ever seen Laputa, The Castle in the Sky, Miyazaki film? Clearly, the robots from that, the long-armed kind of winged things are based on the robots from the first episode of the Superman series.
Oh, wow.
Because they fly the same way. That their silhouette on the ground is exactly the
same.
Yeah. So it's definitely an intentional thing. There's the experimental thing. It's really entertaining. And it's all in public domain now, so you can legally download it if you want to.
Yes, I mean, you'll see, like, I picked up these DVDs for, like, $5.
Yes.
Yeah, you'll see them everywhere. It's kind of the DVD you'll see at, like, a local gas station or something.
That's right, yeah, with cheap covers and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But you don't have to spend... You can legally download it if you want to.
And I think the voice...
And I never get to say that, so...
Yeah, true. Was from Bud Collier, who did the radio show.
Oh,
and
right.
Then they kind of went over to the animated... So they would show these before the films? Is that what would happen? Like,
I believe so. I think you would actually pay to just see this, because these were quite big budget things.
Yeah.
They weren't just these little tacked on things. At that time, it was the biggest budget for any kind of animated shorts ever.
Yep.
It was like $250,000 in those days would have been a hell of a lot.
So would you sit down and watch this and the news or something as well?
Probably. Like, and there'd be a lot of screaming kids going, oh my God! But what you mentioned about the voice actor, you've watched these obviously.
I have, yeah.
I love how the guy who plays Superman, you mentioned his name.
Bud Collier.
The way he says this looks like a job for Superman, it's not like this looks like a job for Superman.
No.
It's more like this looks like a job for Superman. Like, sort of like, ugh.
Begrudgingly,
yeah.
I'm the strongest man on the planet, but I guess I'll get it done.
Yeah, it kind of rings true to this, like, if you were a Superman, you'd be like, oh, I see this sort of thing every day.
And Lois is getting kind of, she needs rescuing, I think, in every episode, doesn't she? And
she does. She's her typical kind of...
damsel.
Okay, everyone leave the ship now, and then she, like, sneaks aboard, you know, to get the scoop.
Yeah.
She doesn't talk like that, but...
everyone wears hats indoors and...
I kind of like Lois in this. I thought, oh, no, I'm going to get sick of the damsel in distress. But she's quite sort of feisty.
Yes.
And when she fired that Tommy gun, I'm like, she's redeemed herself. You never see the damsel in distress pick up a gun like off the floor and shoot at bad guys.
No, that's true.
So kudos to them.
If I was a damsel, I'd be doing that. I mean, there's no Lex Luthor, there's no Metallo or Brainiac. I mean, this is in the 40s when none of those characters are around. But Perry White's in there.
Oh yeah, he is. Yeah.
I don't think Jimmy Olsen is.
There's like a little kind of news reporter dude who's like, hey, Superman.
Yeah.
Like, just, so I'm not sure if that's meant
prototype.
To be
prototype. Proto
Olsen. Olsen.
Yeah.
Yeah, the first 8 episodes have those kind of science fiction-y things, and then the last 8 are all kind of war ones.
Okay.
And those ones aren't as fun, I'd say.
I think one of my favourite ones from just the old strips when they had from in the 40s was one of them when he was fighting scientists and things. There was an evil plot to put bacteria into the water supply, and I just thought that was really quaint to have bacteria put into the water supply to think that they think this is the big evil thing that they've invented, so...
Before we talk about Superman Earth 1, Jani, do you want to talk about Serenity, The Shepherd's Tale, which has just come out from Dark Horse?
Yeah, it just came out yesterday. Brand new book. It's been announced for about 3 years now, so I've been waiting for it for that long.
Yep.
Hoping that I have a friend who's really big in Serenity. He's like, oh, have they announced it yet? Have they announced it yet? They have finally announced the beginning of this year. I had about a 7-month wait on it, which is long for a comic, because normally it's about 2 to 3 for a book.
Yes.
And it's an adaptation about one of the characters that you didn't really get...
In the TV series?
To find it, because the TV series was cut short.
Yep.
Basically, people at Fox decided, oh, no, it's not really doing exactly what we want it to do. It's not selling 100 million ads, so we're going to cut it short. So a lot of these things were sort of left as loose ends and nothing was tied up, really. So you're left with this this character that you didn't find anything about. There was sort of mysterious circumstances around in the TV series, and this is how you find out exactly what was the... what was his history and what was thing. And it's like a Benjamin Button sort of story. I mean, you start and it's, you know, the present and it just works its way back. It'll be like 6 months earlier, you know, 4 years earlier, you know, 10 years earlier and things like that. And you eventually go all the way back until his childhood.
Yep.
On this character called Daryl Book. And you find out, he's a lot more complex than you initially expected. There was something to him in the story, but to sort of see it all now is really interesting. I quite liked it, but again, from a nostalgia perspective, because I know that Serenity's been cut off now.
Yeah.
So to see this, and the art's not the best art I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's by Chris Samnee, who's doing a Thor series for Marvel at the moment.
But I mean, it's stylized and it does its job. It does. It's not terrible art.
So the character, was he called, he's the like African-American preacher guy with the dreadlock. He was called the Shepherd in the TV series?
Yeah, Shepherd is like priest.
Okay.
So, or pastor, or, you know. So that was the term for that. And his name was Daryl Book.
And it's written by Joss Whedon and his brother Zach Whedon. And obviously created the TV series.
I think Joss had more to do with the actual sort of outline. There's an interview with Zach at the back of it. And he kind of said, Joss handed me this outline of what he wanted to happen. And I was kind of given sort of free rein in between all that.
Cool.
So Zach, who I think there's Zach and Jed Whedon, and they all kind of collaborate quite often.
Yeah, I think Zach is writing.
Jed's a musician and composer, and
Zach's writing Terminator. I think
1984 at the moment
for Dark Horse as well.
Is that any good?
Don't know. I think it's only
it's
a couple
been really
issues
popular.
Yeah.
Really? That we've had. I haven't even had a chance to pick up and read one yet.
Wow.
They've disappeared. But again, that could be just a nostalgia thing. Yeah. So we don't know yet. It's only they're up to the second issue. Came out this week. So,
speaking about something else that's popular, that
Before we change the topic, just because I look at the art in there, it's interesting that you don't like it because it reminds me of Gotham Central. The kind of art, it's got a more mundane sort of look to it, which probably maybe that's why it's not appealing to you in that
it's
Firefly
quite similar,
sense.
It is quite similar to say something like DMZ as well.
Yeah,
it's got simple, not overly detailed.
It's like it's cartoony and. In some shots as well, it looks a bit like Darwin Cook as well, which
I was
going to
say Darwin Cook or David Mazzucchelli or someone.
It does look like it's not, but you know, it's one of these comics that I thought the previous ones they've had really nice painted art and things like that.
Right.
So this is a more cartoony sort of throwback. So I didn't say it's not what I expected in terms of art.
It reminds me of a recent run on Daredevil, the Man of No Fear thing. Yeah,
yeah,
definitely looks a bit like that. So if you like that sort of thing, you might like it. Yeah.
Mm.
But, yeah, sorry.
I was going to mention Batman and Robin 16, which is the last issue by Grant Morrison, Scottish writer Grant Morrison.
The very last?
Well, other people are taking over after him.
He's still writing other stories.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
Batman Incorporated and The Dark Knight are two new series that start in November
this
month. But, it's popular that I haven't had a chance to read, but I do know that Bruce Wayne kind of comes out and saying in the issue that he's supporting Batman, that he's kind of funding Batman on his crusade now to go around the world and recruit other Batmen, which is where the Batman Incorporated series, so there'll be a Spanish Batman and a Chinese Batman and this Batman. So some people online are saying it's kind of like Iron Man, where Robert Downey Jr. is, I am Iron Man, which happened in the comics a couple of years before the film. But Bruce Wayne isn't saying, I am Batman.
Yeah.
He's like, saying, I'm bankrolling Batman.
How does no one think about it? Huh? And he looks just like him, too.
Well, apparently...
Because he doesn't talk like this in the real world.
It can't be him. He's not doing the voice.
Because he hasn't got those dapper glasses on. You know, like,
and his eyes aren't just white orbs.
Yes.
The last few issues, there has been... Vicky Vale, I know, has been getting closer to deducing Batman's real identity. So I think Bruce Wayne is kind of making this announcement to deflect attention from him.
Mm.
Saying, no, I'm not Batman. I'm just helping him out in his war because, you know, I lost
my
parents.
Would he lie?
So that's Batman and Robin 16, so that's out now. All right, time to talk about Superman
F1. We'll have a short break and do Superman F1.
I like what you said.
All right, now for our hotly anticipated review of the hotly selling item, Superman Earth 1 from DC Comics.
Yes.
By J. Michael Straczynski.
Said correctly, sir. And artist Shane Davis, you can't say that wrong.
And what's Straczynski
done? JMS, Spider-Man, as he's commonly known. He created Babylon 5 to TV series. He did the Changeling film with Clint Eastwood, Angelina Jolie. Good film, actually.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. And he's done The Brave and the Bold, the new, not the cartoon, but the series, which teams up DC characters. That's an awesome series, but it's like a different JMS here. He's also doing Superman, where he's just taken over Superman, where Superman is not fighting bad guys anymore, he's just walking across America trying to help people with their everyday problems.
That's
X-raying people and saying, you're going to have a heart attack, you should get to a hospital. Oh,
that's very teased.
What is he doing
comic,
to the Man of Steel? He's also writing Wonder Woman. He's the one who gave her a memory loss and a new leather jacket.
A new jacket.
I'm rolling my eyes.
I'm like a new person. in this story,
it's Malibu Stacy with a brand new hat.
Yeah, but she has a new hat. Well, it is. That is kind of what this is like because I guess it's a reimagining in a modern setting, but it's basically the origin, another retelling of the Superman origin story, which no one had ever heard before.
No,
but it's the same story with a few minor tweaks. And Superman, Clark Kent's a bit more kind of hesitant to take a role. And he sort of comes to Metropolis. He doesn't know what he wants to do with himself. So he tries out for a football team. There's a ridiculous scene where he goes to like this scientist's place. And nothing in that scene makes any sense. And I'm very disappointed.
No, there's all these like formulas written on. I'm wondering, is that an actual formula or is it just gibberish?
Well, it's an actual formula. But the very idea that scientists would get stuck on this one formula for 2 months. And in the background, you see them looking through test tubes. And they're like, what?
This doesn't make any sense. E equals MC4?
And if he wasn't trained at uni, you can't just look at a equation, no matter how super intelligent you are, and go, I know what that means, and I'll solve all your problems. It's kind of like Teen Wolf 2 kind of science, you know, J. Michael Straczynski. Yeah, it's that kind of very lame, like, oh, if I multiply the cosine by the hypotenuse, and and that was just a bad start to the novel for me, because that pulled me right out.
It's basically just sitting, the first few pages are just basically sitting Superman clacking up as God or Jesus, like he's the perfect human being.
Good at everything.
He can do everything. He knows everything. You know, he's like Goodwill Hunting of the superhero world.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then like Deus Ex Machina comes down, like this alien from the world, from the... Okay, so I guess we should explain.
Yep.
Krypton wasn't just an... Is it Krypton?
Krypton.
Yeah, it wasn't just an accident. No. They had like another planet in their same orbit who they were fighting against, and they destroyed the planet.
Correct.
And this is a planet of Darth Maul / Juggalos, which are the Insane Clown Posse fans.
Oh,
that's what
right.
They look like. And they look a bit like Morlocks as well. But you
they
had
do a, look a bit like Morlocks, actually, now that you mention it. Yeah, but I thought he looked a bit David Bowie-esque.
Yes, yeah.
I said he looks like a goth punk Joker.
Yeah.
This is the main bad guy. I think his name is Tur-El. He's like a white guy. He comes down from Krypton's enemy planet. He's been searching for the last son of Krypton across all these planets, and now he finally discovers that he's on Earth, so he brings all his war machines with him.
Yes.
He's this white guy with black stripes all over him and wings.
Yeah, kind of a lame villain.
A new character never seen in Superman comics before, which is going with the whole Earth One series. And Earth One is a series of books, so I think Batman is next, and then Wonder Woman. So it's basically, if you're new to Superman, you pick up Earth One and you know what Superman is. Basically making the Man of Steel accessible
to
people who don't read the series monthly.
But it's the same story again.
It is, and it's nothing new in here. I wasn't impressed with the series at all. There's been a lot of criticism online about it, because it's such a tired script and a tired plot. There's nothing new or fresh about this approach at all.
I wouldn't say it's all horrible. There's a certain scenes in there I like, but overall I'm just kind of baffled by this. Like, one, why is this a huge deal? Like, everyone I've seen reviewing it either talks about the hoodie, which is seriously not a big deal. It just looks like, it looks like the cape.
The cover is basically Superman or Clark Kent with glowing red eyes and a hood, and a lot of the headlines from the mainstream press have covered this, saying Superman gets a hoodie, or Superman for the 21st
Twilight
century.
Or,
like Superman like is a moody teenager with a Justin Bieber hairstyle. It's not that bad, and it's not some desperate attempt to make Clark Kent seem cool.
No.
But it's interesting that they choose that cover image.
Yeah. Well, I don't mind that coverage. At least he's wearing... And the Superman costume is hard to sell on the first, so having him...
That's true.
Rather than ripping open the white office shirt to have him take... pulling apart the hoodie jacket thing, and the hood kind of... The hoods are scary, you know, like the typical superhero scary look, you know?
Yeah.
It's so... I wouldn't say it's that out there, and it's not very adventurous.
It's not, and all the quotes on the back, none of them, like, they're usually the quotes are from, like, comic book... people, but these like Tom Fontana, creative executive producer of Oz, Harlan Ellison, Richard Donner, who directed Superman the movie, these are all people that are quoting how awesome this book
is. What did Harlan Ellison say? Because he's
Harlan Ellison, if you're determined to reimagine the most iconic and most cherished literary identity in close to 100 years, aim for the pinnacle. To get Superman, get Straczynski. This is an absolutely imperial piece of work.
Wow.
I want to have reviews on the back to say, like, well, it sure is 90 pages long and things like that.
.. It's good.
I don't know. When I read it, it just seemed all too convenient.
Yeah.
Deus Ex Machina, definitely. And he kind of felt blackmailed into being Superman. That was the whole thing that I got. Like, I would have perfectly been happy with him just deciding to be an American football player. If I read a series about Superman being an American football player in an alternate universe, I'd be happy with that, to be honest.
That would be interesting. Yeah, I agree.
You know, him sort of, and the sort of trials and tribulations he has to go with that. But it just was, you know, oh, these robots come down and they blow up a thing and there's a spaceship or something. And
just a typical kind
very
of
Independence Day
thing.
And it's stuff we've seen, all stuff we've all seen before. Lois Lane is in it, Jimmy Olsen, Perry White are in it. There's no Lex Luthor, there's no typical bad guys.
But he'll pop up and, you know, there's like another villain pulling the strings, and it's clearly going to be that space robot, I can't remember his name.
Space robot? Mongol? Well, Metallo?
No, you'll
Dark get Side?
No, you'll get it.
Crypto?
No, he's like a Superman villain. Damn it.
Brainiac,
thank you.
What? There's Brainiac in here?
Well, I think he'll be the villain who's pulling the strings, because he gives the Darth Maul planet the power to Okay, right.
Well, I think this is a done in one. I don't know if they're going to do any more or if they will.
It seems like it's just a setup to the start of a series.
Well, I don't know if it will be a series, but you could be right.
Because when they were first pitching this, they said they'd start off with OGNs and then they might pick up with an ongoing kind of pamphlet series.
Okay.
I don't get it. They should have just got some young writers on, young bloods who do other kind of work and let them just do whatever they want. You know how, like, they let Frank Miller do Dark Knight Returns?
Yeah.
Now, that's the kind of book that would appeal to outsiders more so because it's something they've not seen before. It doesn't seem like the normal Batman story, kind of thing. And that's probably what Superman needed. This just seemed very straight-laced.
It seemed a bit like he's dragging and Clark Kent kicking and screaming into the 25th. But he never... Mm. The wheel didn't need to be reinvented. The frustrating thing is that JMS is a very good writer. But lately, with Superman walking around in suburbia and one random losing their memory and looking at Charlie's Angel and now this, I'm just like, what happened?
I think what happened was because there was a sort of a big falling out with Straczynski. He was with Thor, writing Thor for Marvel.
True.
I think DC was like, oh, we've got him. We've got to get him to do something big. Let's Superman, do it. Mm-hmm. You've got 10 minutes. Write one. Yeah. Like, okay. Here you go.
The art is good, I must say. Oh, yeah, Shane Davis, he's done like Superman Batman work, and there's a... When Clark Kent eventually puts the Superman costume in, it's a slightly altered costume. I was kind of thinking, why not start from scratch? I mean, there's like
just
a yellow
around
the S symbol. The belt's a bit different, and
it seems like an editorial thing that they have to still make him look like their regular Superman, so those issues will still sell.
Yeah,
rather than. And again, I'm just going to have to mention Dark Knight Returns again because he changes the outfit, but he does it in his own way. Remember? He made it grey with just a black symbol. He didn't have any yellow on him.
Yeah, that's true.
He starts it off with a normal outfit and then changes it. I just kind of wish they'd been a bit more adventurous. It seems like a lot of editorial influence on this book to make it conform to their regular... But on the art, a couple of things I noticed. Lois Lane is absolutely modelled on the actress that plays Deborah Morgan on Dexter.
You're not the first person to say that.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. I didn't notice it because I don't watch the series, but she's his sister or...?
Yeah, she plays his sister and she actually married Anthony Michael Hall in real life.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so brother and sister got married.
She was in that Wreck film, wasn't she?
Yep, she's on the Wreck remake.
Which is a good film.
Yeah. That kind of... As soon as I saw that, I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's his fantasy casting, I suppose.
Okay.
And when Superman, Clark Kent or whatever, puts on the Clark Kent typical outfit, you know, like the geeky outfit, it's a spot-on drawing of Dean Cain. I kid you not. Flick to it. That's all I saw. Dean Cain smile.
Okay.
I think it happens a bit later. Like towards the end.
And there's a couple of things that like Jonathan Kent is dead in this story, which is kind of like the film continuity. So he's only got Martha Kent, which is alive. But yeah, a couple of things stood out from me, like Jimmy Olsen's, the photos of Jimmy Olsen's, Perry White, shout to Jimmy Olsen, because the photos he's taking are 20 megs each, and it's crashing the Daily Planet mainframe.
You're crashing the database.
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, like, if it was written 20 years ago, I'd say, okay. But if it was 600...
That panel reminds you of Dean Cain. That's all I see when I see that. Yeah.
And like, if the images were like 600 megs each, then they'd probably go, well, that's not quite really good enough, because, you know, you don't start with 20 megs. You start with... hundreds of megs and then
just
get them
turn
down.
The camera setting down. He's not like an idiot.
Yeah, or get into the computer and then...
Well, this is a respected newspaper. You'd think they'd have...
Oh, that's J. Michael Straczynski going, look, I've heard of megabytes. You know, I've heard of equations. Yeah. Here's one, you know. That site scene and that megabyte scene was just... Just don't do that.
No,
write what you know. He wrote the football scene, and I assume he knows football because I don't understand it. But
it seemed like
football to me.
It seemed footballish.
Yeah, all the different the quarterback and the front liner and the back liner and the sideliner and the sideline. I don't know all the different positions, but it kind of seems like Celine Dion rapping.
Yeah,
it's just a desperate attempt to be cool that doesn't work.
And what do you guys think of the? We mentioned what the villain design looks like, but do you think this villain has any lasting appeal?
No. Superman has a lot of good sci-fi villains. Mm. And I like the idea that Krypton's explosion wasn't an accident. It's probably not the first time it's been covered. I'm sure other stories have covered it. I like Jor-El's kind of got this beard and this kind of...
That really worked for me. It was an original... That made a bit more sense than the planet just suddenly...
So it's like a racial war, and you can kind of understand that, you know, your planet killed my planet, so since you're the last survivor of your planet, I'm going to kill you, and then I'll be victorious. I like that motivation.
That reminded me of, you know how people talk about Superman as the immigrant story?
Yes.
That worked for me because he's like from a war-torn place and he's come to America to start a new life, you know? And that
and
worked.
The past comes with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But... So you guys mentioned you quite like the art. I thought it's very typical of DC's current output, which is a bit, for me anyway, I think Marvel's doing more interesting work. It's, on their mainstream titles?
It's trying to be... It's quite a realistic approach. Like, there's the backgrounds and stuff are detailed. Occasionally, the faces are a bit misshapen and a bit off.
Yeah, that's... I think because he's working off character models and he draws... He can draw men, but women he seems to struggle with.
The action scenes aren't anything fantastic. Yeah. Like, his page layouts are quite standard. Mm. But...
And there's a few panels where he will repeat a piece of art, but it's clearly just been copy and pasted.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Okay.
Yeah, I can show you the exact page where it bothers me, because it just seems like a very lazy thing to do on this premiere book.
I think if you're new to Superman and you want to find out who Superman is, avoid Earth 1.
Yes. Check out All-Star Superman.
Yeah. All-Star Superman, which is now collected in two trades, or even the 1986 miniseries Man of Steel that John Byrne did, that still stands up. Or even, you know, like Superman, Man for Tomorrow, or... Oh, okay, yeah, I see what you're doing. Yeah, but that does happen where there's like a pause and characters are talking.
Yeah, but the artwork should is really redraw the panel rather than just copying and pasting and then maybe changing the guy's lips. It's very... I don't know, you could say it's anime-inspired.
Yeah. I'm trying to cut cost on the animation. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we're all disappointed by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
I'm interested. I can't remember off the top of my head who is doing Batman Earth 1. I don't know if it's JMS as well, but they're sticking to the original graphic novel format.
Mm. Batman's always been a much more interesting character than Superman, to be honest, anyway. Superman's just...
Yeah.
As he just doesn't have enough flaws.
Yeah.
And Batman can't fit into any content. He can be a sci-fi hero.
He can do anything you want.
He can
want,
be a gothic kind of hero.
I mean, yeah, with Superman, having him kind of flawed and go, oh, I don't know what to do, almost kind of is...
Well, what does it matter what you do? Because you're invincible. You can do whatever you want. So.
It doesn't seem true to the character. Like, when we're talking about the Fleischer cartoons from the 40s, and All-Star Superman has this as well, he's self-sure. He knows what he can do, and he knows he can help, and he does it, and he doesn't bitch and moan. And I've always liked that about Superman, is that when they don't try and shoehorn this, oh, woe is me, I have superpowers kind of thing
into
it.
Emo.
Yeah.
I think as a character that would make sense, but you think in the point of this story begins, he would have done all that already. He's had his powers for years.
Superman.
He would have known who he was with Ma and Pa Kent. So by the time he goes to Metropolis, he's certain that he wants to save the world. He's got the costume and everything, you know. So he's not just going to use it for Halloween. So,
One sequence I did really like is, and probably one of the few ones I probably remember from this, is when he ascends into space, but he's not in the Superman outfit. He's just wearing his jacket and jeans and stuff. And it's at a point where he is like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. And that sequence just sort of rung true for me and worked. That was one of the few ones where I got this is... They really expressed what it would be like to have these kind of... You know, they talk about awe and amazingness in superhero comics, and this is probably one of the few panels, at least in this book anyway, that I got that feeling, because he just looks like a normal kid, but he's flown up into space, and he's looking back on Earth, and he just looks kind of like lost, and he's like, I'm an outsider kind of deal.
Yeah.
The only bit that rung true for me.
Okay.
But, yeah. Not worth getting the whole book for that scene, though.
It isn't. It's a well-presented book, hardcover, got it embossed, looks good, stands out on the shelf. Mm. Unfortunately, the contents between the covers... Let it down.
I thought I mentioned the embossing thing because I thought about this before. You know how you can see it, I guess, under certain lighting. What's that for?
I don't know. Just so they can charge more. I mean, this book costs $30, which is a bit. I mean, if it had like a normal.
That's pretty reasonable for a hardcover, though.
Is that Australian?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So it'd be quite cheap in the US, though, wouldn't it?
I'd imagine so. And it is a fair few pages. I mean, it's got to be 100 and something pages, I guess. And it's got like a couple of pages of concept artwork in the back and the actual story that Clark Kent wrote about Superman, which is like kind of cool. But so it's a few extras in there. But
so we won't be seeing a sequel to this?
I don't know, I reckon, to be honest.
Yeah?
I think...
They'll stick with it?
I'm interested to see if it sells more in bookstores around the comic shops, because fanboys have ripped this one apart online.
Yeah, but they're buying it like hell.
They're probably... Well, I don't know if fanboys are buying it, actually. Well, they're probably buying it out of curiosity, or...
How are the sales?
We're sold out of them. Completely.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Maybe
Amazon sold out all their stock of it.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true.
So they're going to a quick second printing of it already, so it's sold out.
That is true.
But I don't know. to be honest. I didn't think you're going to get a lot of people recommending it. Lots of people would, I think once this is, all this is done, it's going to go way down.
Yeah, yeah, could be right there.
It just seems like it's their second attempt to do Marvel's Ultimates. Because yes. they tried All-Star.
Yep.
All-Star Superman worked quite well.
It did.
All-Star Batman and Robin, some people really liked, and most people were like, this is just dumb.
Over the top, yep.
Yeah, and they're just trying it again and pretending that that's not what they're doing. Like, we're imagining. And it just seems very cynical.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
I think to do with like all these sort of things, I think DC and Marvel and everyone's kind of panicking at the moment because sales are way down. Mm. They've dropped all the prices of all their $4 comics.
Yes.
They've all gone back down to $3 now. So I think it's just it's a panicked move. We think, oh God, we've got to do... Who have we got that we can write something? Who's new? We'll do what we tell them to do. Oh, let's get J. Michael Straczynski in, get him to write something, churn it out quickly, and see what we can do. But you have to put quality into it that makes people come back.
Yeah. Something new, original. Get Harlan Ellison does a quote on the back. Let Harlan Ellison write a Batman or Superman. Yeah. Or write a new character. I don't care. Make up something new.
Yeah.
If you want Superman to be new and exciting, write a new and exciting character and maybe let Superman do his own thing.
But it's the same. That's the Hollywood principle. People will go to something they're familiar with.
That's true. People are
familiar with Superman, so they'd rather buy that than a new character, you would think.
But Marvel has like a quite a broad range of characters who are quite appealing, whereas really DC's got... Two.
Yeah.
What's the third one?
Wonder Woman.
No, she doesn't sell that well.
Yeah, that's true.
She's not well known, but her book doesn't sell well, does it?
Not really. Yeah. No, she's still very sort of sidelined.
Yeah.
I mean, Green Lantern's probably the third only one.
I'd say, other than that.
Yeah, that's true. Mm. Okay. Wow. Sorry, JMS. Keep trying, buddy.
Better luck next time.
You've done it before. We know you can do it again. Superman Earth 1, there's better Superman stories out there for newbies. Avoid Earth 1.
Ouch. And to wrap up this week, this will be our website of the week, and it's more of a particular artist to follow as well. It's a dude called Pogo, who's from Perth, WA, just like us.
P-O-G-O.
P-O-G-O, and his site's pogomix.net. He has links to his YouTube, etc. from there. What he does are these video and music remixes of nostalgic films, I suppose. So he'll dip into, say, in this one is Alice in Wonderland, he'll dip into the whole film and find little short snippets here and there, like someone slapping a table, that'll be the snare drum. And then he'll build up a whole song from all these different sounds, and the video reflects where he takes each bits and pieces. And right now is a bit of a YouTube sensation. He spoke at a international copyright conference.
Yep.
And that sort of stuff is, there we go, on copyright. So they got like musicians to talk about remixing. Oh God, remixing culture. There was like a pop sound there. Ignore that.
Yeah, I've never heard of this guy, but he's a Perth guy. We are big supporters of local artists and whatnot. So, Johnny and Mladen are familiar with this guy because they're a lot more cooler than I am, which isn't hard to be.
That's true.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good. This guy's doing some good stuff, and he uses good film. There's like a Terminator 2 one in there, and. Well, all manner of things.
If you get a chance to check it out, the one that I first saw was one called Upula, which is a remix of the Pixar film Up.
Yep. Oh, yes.
And that's really cool. And that was the first one that I heard. And then the next one after that I saw was one called Alice.
Yep.
And that was really good as well. And that's Alice in Wonderland by the Disney Alice in Wonderland.
Mm-hmm. So they're all like 3-4 minutes.
3-4 minute tracks. That he has a style that he sort of sticks to. It's kind of quite listenable, kind of pleasant to the ears
it's kind
thing.
Of sort of backgroundy. Yep. Sort of thing.
Chill out kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty groovy.
You can download all the tracks from his site. He has cleared most of the copyrights now, and he's sort of got the companies have kind of gotten on board with him now.
Yeah, you said he's working with Disney or something.
Yeah, Disney hired him to do some particular ones. So he's done Mary Poppins recently. He did Sword in the Stone. Remember that one?
Yes.
Obviously Alice in Wonderland. And Snow White is his most recent one, and that one's quite well done as well.
Cool.
So check him out. Pogomix.com, I think.
Yeah, but there'll be a good Tron one.
.net, sorry.
Eventually.
Oh, I'm sure of it.
Because Daft Punk, is it? Are doing the Tron music?
Yeah, they're doing Daft Punk. They've got their
music video out now.
Yeah, yeah. Have you guys all checked that out?
I haven't seen it yet. I'm keen to see it.
Their music video?
Mm.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I guess their style mixes in with Tron Legacy quite well.
Yeah.
Pretty techno-y.
Mm. I think it's a bit dull for Daft Punk, to be honest, but I guess it might be interesting in the context of the film. As a single, it's very kind of...
Because I was reading in Empire, and I think they're doing the music for the whole film. They're doing like a soundtrack, and they've been on board since pre-production.
That's right.
They're really excited about it.
And they're in it?
Yes, they make cameos as DJs or something.
Programs or something.
Yeah. You'll see them in their outfits, yeah.
Nice.
But they've been doing that a lot with films recently. Obviously, you had Trent Reznor on Social Network, but... Yeah, they have them work with an experienced soundtrack guy to get all the timing and to make it fit within the film. And I'm sure Disney are doing that as well because for a multi-million thing, they're going to want someone who's done a soundtrack before just to make sure they're on the right track and to go and rein them in.
Right track.
Although, good pun. Daft Punk did that Interstellar 5555.
That was an anime made around the tracks,
though.
Oh,
was it?
Yeah.
Oh, it was the other way around, was it?
By the guy who made Galactic Railroad, something, something, something. Yeah, that's a good show. Yeah. I think he also worked on Star Blazers. Remember?
Yes.
Yes, Battleship Yamato.
Oh, I saw a trailer for a live action. That looks cool. It's only it's in Japanese, but the little sailor guy with the hat on and everything.
I haven't seen it,
looks pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'll have to show you after the show.
Is that out yet, that film? Or?
I don't think it's out yet. Speaking of other live action anime, just because we're on the topic, there's a live action Gantz film.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
That's also a manga comic.
That's what you talked about last week, I think.
I mentioned the manga, yeah, that's right. And there'll be a live-action film with that, so I'll be curious to see whether it's as perverted as the anime and the manga.
If they do it, something like Battle Royale, to the same sort of extent,
I'd hope
that should
be
fine.
Good film.
Battle Royale was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Probably Quentin Tarantino's favourite film, I think. It's in his top 10 of recent films, yeah.
Awesome. That wraps us up for this week, I think.
Yeah, good enough.
Got through a lot of stuff. We've rejoiced and both bashed in various Superman endeavours, talked about music and all manner of things.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to hear all of our podcasts, you go to extrasequential.com. We're also on iTunes and Mixcloud. If you want to shoot us an email, it's Chris with a K, chris@extrasequential.com. Always happy to receive feedback. My blog is comicbookjesus.com.
Music for the show is at purgeaudit.com, and my blog is also purgeaudit@blogspot.com.
And if you're in Perth, come in and check out Quality Comics in Hay Street.
And apologies for the popping sound effects here. I think there's a clown next door.
I had beans for breakfast. Thanks for listening.
Oh, yeah, thanks. See
you. We'll do another show next week.
We should pick actually what books we're going to review.
Oh, yes, we should. We just don't plan ahead, do we?
No. We'll see what's coming
out
new.
We'll have to talk about detectives one week.
Johnny, what's coming out new next week?
I don't know, until Monday.
The new Batman books, the Dark Knight and Batman Incorporated, I think they're out next week.
A whole bunch of different things, yeah.
So, yeah, we could talk about them.
We could. And on that kind of trailing out dead air moment, goodbye.
Bye.
Ciao.